We'll lead with a refresher this morning on the cost of repealing Obamacare. From Marketplace, I'm David Brancaccio. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office has released its calculation of the costs and benefits if Congress repeals the federal health care law but doesn't replace it. The CBO says 32 million people will be left uninsured within 9 years and premiums would double. On the other hand, the federal deficit would drop by $473 billion. Dan Gorenstein at the Marketplace Health Desk at WHYY in Philadelphia. What are we hearing from the GOP after this CBO score?
Well, honestly, even before this pretty brutal score came out, there was lots of talk about how repeal now and replace later was going nowhere. So while it's virtually impossible to say anything with certainty about this bill, David, I think it is safe to say the score from the CBO pretty much guaranteed repeal first and trust us, we'll come up with something great, is actually dead. Like, dead, dead.
So that's repeal only, not replace for now. But we see that Bloomberg News is reporting today that a new CBO score is expected perhaps later today on a repeal and replace plan that's still somehow out there.
Yeah, while earlier in the week there were plenty of obituaries being written about the Senate bill, it is still alive. You can call it a zombie bill or a Lazarus bill, depending on your perspective. That new CBO score will give everybody a slightly better sense of the number of people who lose coverage, what happens to premiums, and how much money McConnell has to play with. Last night I was talking to a source who told me that one idea being discussed is to give states that expanded Medicaid under Obamacare $200 billion to help ease the pain of ending this expansion and making deeper cuts to the program. Now, that may sound like a lot of money, but the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities did the math, and when you add it all up, between reductions to Medicaid and less generous subsidies, that's a $1.2 trillion hit to low and moderate income Americans. Getting the $200 billion would mean signing on to a plan that cuts benefits by $1 trillion.
Marketplace's Health Desk reporter Dan Gorenstein, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Let's turn to another big Trump administration initiative, spending on bridges, tunnels, roads. The president wants to spend $1 trillion over the next 10 years, a lot of it using private money, investors who will expect returns through tolls or other means. This has been stuck in a low gear as the administration fights other battles. But if you had the money, what would you build? Let's hear about the wish list from my colleague Tom Scheck with American Public Media's investigative unit APM Reports. Morning, Tom.
Good morning, David.
Give me a sense of what you learned. I mean, there's a lot of public-private money working on stuff even as we speak.
We looked at a long list of projects submitted to the White House to see whether there was a possibility that private investors would finance transportation and water-related projects, mostly on the state level. A lot of governors submitted projects earlier this year. And what we learned is about 1 in 10 of the transportation and water-related projects were being considered with some sort of private investment. And that's either fully private investment or some kind of partnership with a public entity. And to give you a bit of comparison, 10 years ago, it was huge news when the Chicago Skyway or the Indiana Toll Road were sold to private investors, and now it's becoming more and more commonplace.
And where are these projects that are already moving forward located?
Almost all of them are serving urban areas, whether it's Southern California or a rail tunnel between New York and New Jersey. Just two of the projects that we looked at, both in Alaska, are located in rural America, and both of those projects basically are geared towards trying to serve a business, whether it's mining or something like that. Now, this is important because the president is pushing for governments to partner with private investors to pay for these projects. And what we're finding is that a lot of these investors are looking to earn a return on the money that they're spending, and the money is mostly located in urban America because that's where the people are.
Yeah, let's presume all of them are chasing some kind of return on this. And I know the White House wants to expand a federal loan system that would help nurture and launch these privately financed projects, especially highways. What do we know about those?
Over the past 6 years, the U.S. government has been forced to take a haircut of hundreds of millions of dollars in loans to three private highway projects in Texas, Virginia, and California. Now, this is something that we're going to have to watch as things move forward here because the Trump administration is pushing this, and states are also looking to attract private investment through these so-called public-private partnerships, and those loans that we mentioned are going to be some of the things that fuel that investment.
To see a list of these infrastructure projects and learn more about how they're financed, go to marketplace.org. My colleague Tom Scheck with American Public Media's investigative unit APM Reports. Thank you.
Thank you.
After the S&P 500 went up 0.5% yesterday, stock index futures are up just slightly this morning. Uber brags about cheaper, quick, and easy, but often not for people with disabilities. This week, a group called Disability Rights Advocates filed a class action lawsuit against Uber over wheelchair-accessible vehicles. Marketplace's Rima Kreis reports.
In New York City, Uber's got a fleet of about 58,000 vehicles, and only a couple hundred of them are wheelchair-accessible. Now, whether Uber legally has a responsibility to provide more
really comes down to, at the end of the day, whether or not Uber is a technology company or a transportation company.
Todd Aidman is a partner with the firm Ford & Harrison. He says Uber considers its drivers independent contractors, not employees. So technically, it's off the hook.
But because Uber says they're a technology company, doesn't mean that every court's eventually going to agree with them.
Uber says it's made efforts to have more wheelchair-accessible cars, but admits more work needs to be done. Santosh Rao is head of research at Manhattan Venture Partners. He says for Uber to accommodate more disabled passengers,
they will have to change their compensation structure, the incentive structure.
And those extra costs?
At some point, they will probably pass it down to the passengers.
And he says if Uber doesn't do more, it could face another blow to an already battered public image. I'm Rima Kreis for Marketplace.
The benchmark for interest rates in America, some of them at least, the 10-year Treasury yield is up at 2.27%. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.